Buck Rising Show is powered by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Reporting from every NFL city and live in Nashville every day.
I know, Buck, everybody knows you have a radio show.
It's the Buck Rising Show on 104.5 The Zone.
Hour number two on this Tuesday. Glad to have you guys back. Hope you had a great Memorial Day weekend. There is a report out there that we are currently working to vet, but it comes by way of, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Kevin Weekes. W-E-E-K-E-S, multimedia broadcaster and analyst for ESPN, the NHL Network, TSN, NHL.com. He's had a lot of jobs, apparently. 285,000 followers, which doesn't mean that he's credible, just because he's got a lot of Twitter followers. But shall I should I put this out there? Should we wait, Lucas, until we have confirmation? I don't know. Who is the Adam Schefter of hockey?
Breaking sports news on 104.5 The Zone.
To answer that question, I would say it's Elliot Friedman. Okay. But Weekes has done work with ESPN, NHL Network, TSN, NHL.com. So if he is reporting this, then it is worth breaking on here.
All right. So he says, I'm told the Preds are making a change behind the bench. And one-time Predator Andrew Burnett will be their new head coach in Music City. And he ats some various outlets, ESPN, the NHL, NHL Network, DraftKings Sportsbook. Okay, so according to Kevin Weekes, Preds would then have fired their previous head coach or their current head coach and are hiring Andrew Burnett. I don't know much about his background as far as coaching. We haven't seen anything at this point. Here we go. Alex Doherty, my former colleague at A to Z Sports. John Hines will not return as head coach as per Kevin Weekes. Instead, Barry Trotz will give the job to Andrew Burnett, the first ever coach of the Nashville Predators, hires the guy who scored their first ever goal.
Wow.
Well, so they gave Hines until the end of the season. They've obviously had a considerable amount of time. The Preds have not been playing hockey for about a month.
Yeah, it was looking like John Hines was going to keep his job. So this is a little out of left field, as far as I'm concerned.
So, I guess, you know, what is your reaction to this? Do you think it's fair that the Preds have fired John Hines under these circumstances? We knew that changes were going to come in some form or fashion once they transitioned David Poile into his new role and Barry Trotz was then assuming the role of general manager and has been, you know, obviously around the franchise. This has been something that's gone on for the last couple of months. So has, and forgive me, I'm unfamiliar with Burnett's background. Does he have previous NHL head coaching experience?
He's never been hired as a head coach in the NHL. He has been an interim head coach, was an assistant for the Florida Panthers in the 2021-22 season when they made a change and Burnett was the interim for the remainder of the season. They finished first in the Atlantic. They won their division that year, had 108 points on the regular season, but got swept in the conference semifinals against the Tampa Bay Lightning in a Florida matchup. So that was a year ago, and he was not retained. This past season, Burnett was an assistant coach for the New Jersey Devils, which ironically is the last stop that John Hines had, was the head coach of the Devils before he was the head coach of the Preds. But Burnett has been the interim for the Panthers, as I said, also has been an associate head coach for the Minnesota Wild and the Minnesota Wild's assistant general manager throughout his career, most recently an assistant for the New Jersey Devils.
Okay. 615-737-1045 is how you join the discussion. I guess, what does this tell you about the direction of the Nashville Predators? What I'm trying to get a read on it necessarily. I mean, we understood that they needed change. I saw some frustrations voiced earlier about the idea that Vegas, for example, right? The expansion franchise, they get to their second Stanley Cup final in the last 6 years. They obviously made it as an expansion franchise. And I've seen some discussions about the fairness of that, right? When you have the expansion draft that Vegas got, when you get the kind of quality talent that they were able to acquire right out the gate and put together that initial cup run, I could understand how there might be some harsh feelings or some complaints about the fairness of that. Now, having seen them gone to a second one, as Lucas and I were talking about earlier, I believe we were having this discussion off the air, yeah?
Yeah.
The idea that they're just a competent organization at this stage.
They're just good at their job. Stop complaining about the Golden Knights.
Are you frustrated? Did you see many complaints about the Golden Knights? Was your timeline filled with complaints about the Golden Knights?
No, not necessarily. A couple people in the F&M Bank chat. But, yeah, it was fair to be annoyed by it in their expansion year when they go all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals after poaching a bunch of really good players from around the league. But at this point, we're 5-6 years removed from that. I think they only have 6 players left from that original Stanley Cup final or that original expansion year. So yeah, at this point, they're just good at their jobs.
The question is, Trotz has had personnel involvement before. This is not something that's completely new to him. It's like Rand Carthon, right? Rand Carthon comes from a front office. This is not new just because it's their first general manager jobs respectively in Carthon and now Trotz. Trotz obviously gets name equity. He obviously gets benefit of the doubt here because he is beloved by Preds fans still, even after he left. And you can talk about the job that he did in his other landing spots after he left Nashville as their first head coach. But, you know, at this point, we're talking about the direction of this moving forward. So you got a first-time GM, a first-time head coach coming into this thing, both with very, very strong roots here and a team that could best be described as, I don't even want to give them up and coming just because they had to play a lot of young players at the end. And we saw some guys that might be able, I mean, they were basically playing with a Milwaukee Admiral squad by the end of it. So I don't want to say up and coming.
They were feisty.
That doesn't seem fair. Yeah. Well, the guys that were out there were feisty. Yeah. How much those guys are actually going to see ice time when they are a more healthy team?
Yeah, they were fighting there towards the end.
Right. So I don't really even know the word that I would use to describe the Preds roster at this point. Transitional is probably it, given that they had basically a fire sale and they were able to acquire some draft capital as a result of that. But I don't, and it would be beyond my depth for me to try and like give you an honest evaluation of like the hockey, the quality of the hockey roster, just because, you know, I'm a casual hockey fan as much as anything else. But I do think that the Preds are in as interesting a position as they've ever been in as a franchise, given the amount of unknown around them.
You know what's crazy?
What?
The Eastern Conference champion Florida Panthers, who barely snuck into the postseason and are currently in the Stanley Cup Finals, had exactly as many points as the Preds did by the end of the regular season. Panthers got in as that second wildcard team on 92 points.
What a stat.
Preds were just on the outside looking in.
Are we doing NHL stats of the day now?
Stat of the day. Yeah, the Jets snuck in over the Preds and the Flames with 95 points on the season. Preds had 92.
That's what I'm saying about hockey. Like, it's just, it's so hard for me to get a grasp on.
And the Panthers came down from 3-1 against the Boston Bruins, who just had the best regular season in league history. They won, I believe, in 5 in the second round and then went ahead and swept the Carolina Hurricanes in the Eastern Conference Finals. Just raced to the Stanley Cup.
So, obviously, the team hasn't made the news official yet, but should we ask for an interview? I mean, when have we ever done a Preds interview?
Yeah, we've had Ryan Johansson on the show.
Oh, but that wasn't really, like, do you remember how I had to do the Ryan Johansson interview?
No.
I was running around somewhere. I was supposed to be able to do it at my home. Like, we were.
Oh, you did it? Yeah, I did it in my car.
Johansson had to call me on my cell phone. I had to hold a recording device and put my phone on speaker in the car. I was in Donaldson for some reason. I don't remember that. And that was like the first year that we were on the air. I don't think we've ever done. No, didn't we have Poile on once? I don't know. We have had
Poile on.
I have done a bad job of trying to get as many hockey interviews for obvious reasons as we do football interviews. But either way, 615-737-1045. Vols apologist from the borough up next. What's happening?
Listen, Lucas Panzeca, he's either a genius or his totally organic, unforced show reference that he dropped on the soccer broadcast or he needs to be chastised for not being able to say the word vehemently.
So wait, he actually did it?
He dropped a vehemently in the soccer broadcast, and I stood up and said, oh, no!
Did you do it on purpose?
I did not do it on purpose.
Why not?
I did drop that word.
People are listening.
So disappointing.
I dropped that word, and I am just now connecting those dots, Vols apologist. I apologize. That was not an intentional show reference by me.
I was so proud of you, man.
Howard.
Thanks, love the show.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you for listening.
What are you scared of?
What do you mean, what am I scared
of? What are you scared of to do show bits in the middle of the soccer broadcast?
It's just so unnecessary.
It's not.
It has nothing to do with the job
unnecessary
at hand.
For who? The audience wants it.
Oh, my God.
The audience is listening to your soccer broadcast, not just because they want to hear show references.
I should have just said it was intentional to appease you guys.
Yes, you should have, because then I wouldn't have been on your neck this way. Now I demand that you do it at least. When's the next game you're calling?
Saturday. They're at Dallas on Saturday.
Okay. What one bit can I commit? Can I get you to commit to doing? What we don't even have to start with an offensive one.
What would you like me to? Oh, you don't want to start with an offensive one.
No.
What would you like me to reference? What show bit or?
Well, I want you to be able to do it organically, but if we're going to have to shove this stuff down your throat, then I don't. It has to be one of your things. It has to be. There's no way that you can get a sub. I mean, there is a way that you could get a sub car in there. It would make me laugh.
There's no context to that.
In what
world?
Can't you talk about somebody's contract situation as a bargain?
Every time. Then I would just sound like an idiot that can't say the word bargain.
Well, thank you for being willing to do both of those things in the middle of my three-hour radio show as opposed to your soccer broadcast.
This is my idiot self on the mic right now. My professional self is what you hear on the soccer broadcast.
Thank you so much. Do you know how many people you would make happy? If you did that, if we got a clip of you doing something show related on the soccer broadcast, you would be a hero to these people.
See,
they would like you even more than they like you now.
See what I can do.
Okay. That's completely noncommittal. We're going to at Lucas Panzeca is where you can publicly pressure him. 615-737-1045. Coach Doug Matthews is next.
Searching HVAC near here.
Right here, ma'am. How can we help?
Wow, nobody local? Huh.
Wait, what? We are an HVAC company literally in your neighborhood. Why is she not seeing us?
Just all the big chains. Well, it is what it is.
What in the... Can you not see us?
Nope, they can't see you. Because you're buried deep in the list of local HVAC providers. You are invisible online. Introducing Cumulus Boost. Get a boost, get found, get on the map. Learn more at cumulusboost.com.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Get down!
So we got spring meetings going on in Destin, Florida right now, the SEC spring meetings, to be specific. A lot of stuff on the discussion, or on the docket, rather, for discussion. Including the 8 or 9 game conference schedule. They're taking a look at field storming, apparently, according to Ross Dellinger, among some other things. So, the most contentious of these issues, obviously, with Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC, is how best to manage the conference schedule. We know the pros and cons of an 8-game schedule, and we'll go through them here in just a second. We know the pros and cons of a 9-game schedule at this stage. And basically, not just league-wide, but to run them through the University of Tennessee prism, probably more than anything, because Vanderbilt's impact on this. What do you think Vandy fans want out of this? It's probably the 8-game conference schedule, right? Because I think we touched on this a little bit last week. They probably just want some other way to get an easier win, to stay bowl eligible.
From Vanderbilt's perspective, they don't have another rivalry that they would be that desperate to preserve, right? Like, what would they have other than the Tennessee game every year? They say, no, Vanderbilt has to play X team every year. You don't have that. Obviously, 8 SEC games would be more favorable in getting to bowl eligibility than 9 if you're Vanderbilt. But also, I think schools like Vanderbilt and Kentucky, who has kind of been outspoken supporting 8 games, and teams that generally, on a year-to-year basis, want to get to a bowl game, and that if their path would be more difficult with 9 games, would vote against it. Listen, like, Vanderbilt's along for the ride here, getting $60 million annually or whatever it is based on this TV deal. So let's not hold back progress here and what the obvious right answer is, because it would be easier for you to win 6 games. Like, you're benefiting here as much as Alabama or Georgia is financially when it comes to the TV money. So can we just go along for the ride here and do what's best for the conference?
Well, and largely that's how they are going to be approached. Who else fits that category of downtrodden? There's not too many downtrodden SEC programs, but is Vanderbilt alone in this class? I wouldn't think so. Like, who are the doldrums of the SEC West?
I mean, I think Mississippi State, you know, would be one of those schools that would be able to benefit from 8 games. Even Ole Miss, you know, I think even though they're having some success under Lane Kiffin, would benefit from an 8-game slate.
Yeah, but they have better arguments, right, than Vanderbilt does. Like, is Vanderbilt alone in kind of like, hey, you're going to do whatever we tell you you're going to do because you're cashing your check no matter what you choose to do with that check is entirely up to your own discretion. But in the meantime, let the big boys, let the adults, for lack of a better term, figure out exactly how we want to manage the football side of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's not another institution that's in the same position as Vanderbilt that way,
right,
in the SEC.
Right.
So I think that when you look at all these things, We have to talk about a couple of different, well, and I guess how much does something like the college football playoff expansion factor into this? Because that would be my first question, without having a resolution in mind. How much of the impact does the college, like, how much of the discussion in the room is what I'm trying to say poorly, is impacted by the college football playoff expansion? Because when are we scheduled to have college football playoff expansion? Not for another 2 seasons, right?
Should be 2024.
Yeah. Okay.
More year of a 14 playoff.
One more year away. That would, to me, I think, lend itself more to the 8-game conference schedule, right? The idea of college football playoff expansion.
Why do you say that?
Well, I would think. No, I mean, I guess that's counterintuitive, because my initial logic would be.
Are you saying because that would just give more opportunities for Georgia or Bama to lose an extra game and be knocked out of the playoffs?
It would give them more wiggle room.
Right, but it's a 12-team playoff.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's going to be that much of a difference. If that extra game is going to be the difference between keeping a powerhouse out of the playoff discussion. Maybe it will for a team like Kansas State that I think would have just snuck into a 12-team playoff a year ago. Maybe an extra game for a program like that could make that difference. But ultimately, I don't think it's enough. I don't think it's enough of a con to outweigh all the pros of a 9-game schedule. It's just a common sense thing here for me.
So, the other argument that could be made, and that I have seen made in reading some of the materials around this stuff, is the idea of, is there any kind of tangible impact on an athlete's body, for example, playing an 8 conference game schedule versus a 9 conference game schedule. Now, that may sound arbitrary because there's 100% chance for injury in football at any given point, but I do think that the health impact is something that should be considered in the middle of all this, and along with a variety of different options that I know are going to be discussed this week in Destin. Now, it's my understanding that Coach Doug Matthews is not on assignment in Destin. In fact, I think he's on vacation, which is very, very kind of him to take his some of his vacation time away and join us to update on these things. Coach, how are we?
Doing great, and you are correct. I'm not sure how much I'm not a big beach guy, but my family is. So, and it happens to work out well. In fact, I'll head over a little bit later to meetings and probably going to try to visit with a few people over there. So, anyway, how are y'all?
We're doing great. We appreciate you having having some time to jump on with us, Coach. I think it's the first time you and I have had an opportunity to catch up on the air with a lot of the things going on in the SEC. I guess from your standpoint, As you look at the kind of discussions that are being had, Coach Matthews, and I don't know what insights you've been able to glean one way or the other, but the 8-game conference schedule versus the 9-game conference schedule in 2024, what seems to be the general feel coming out of these meetings about this at this point?
Well, a couple of things on it. First off, regardless, and I think this is important for everybody to remember, regardless of whether they go with the 8-game or the 9-game, let's set that aside just for a second, then we'll get right into that.
Sure.
Starting in 2024, after this season, the 2023 season, after this season, they will be going to there will be no division play. So the conference championship game will be against number one and number two. That is for sure. So the only question right now is, are they going to go to an 8-game conference schedule or a 9-game conference schedule? Now, here's where the disagreement is right now. And a couple of months ago, maybe as far as a month ago or as short as a month ago, it was pretty well set that they were going to go with a 9-game schedule instead of the 8-game. Here's the difference, Buck. If it is an 8-game schedule, there will be one common opponent, and let's just take Tennessee and Vanderbilt, since we're in Tennessee. If it's an 8-game, then that one common opponent will be probably for Tennessee and Vanderbilt, each other. When you go to the 9-game schedule, though, now you have to have three permanent opponents. And just by simply doing the math, there's 16 teams. All right, so if take you out of it, whatever your game is, there's 15. So you have to have some way of being able to have, you know, where you play everybody every 2 years. And that's the thing, regardless of which format they go with, every team will now play each team at least every 2 years and home and away two times out of 4 years. So, but the sticking point right now is, they're having a difficult time. It's pretty simple if you go with the 8-game and one traditional opponent. It's a good bit different if you go with the 9-game, picking out who are those three traditional opponents going to be. And that's what the difficulty is right now. Now, I was talking to somebody with Tony Barnhart, actually, who is at the meetings already. He told me that the feeling was that Commissioner Sankey probably, and he wouldn't come out and really say this, the commission would, but is probably leaning towards the 9-game schedule. But it takes a vote. There's only 14 teams. Texas and Oklahoma cannot vote yet. So they are still not a part of the voting group. They're there. They're here, but they're not part of the voting group. So the 14 teams, you have to have 8 teams voting one way or the other, at least. If it is a 7-7, if it breaks even, then there's not a tie breaker. You got to continue to vote till it goes one way or the other. And Buck, I'd say right now that the prime movement right now is probably towards the one common and seven that rotate versus the other. And again, a month ago, I think it was probably 80% the other way.
Coach Doug Matthews is here with us on 104.5 The Zone. We're talking about what's going on in Destin at the SEC spring meetings. You can check out his work at CoachDougMatthews.com. Of course, you can hear him on Football Saturday and Big Orange Sunday right here on 104.5 The Zone. So Lucas is immediately shaking his head at that, Coach, the idea of it trending towards the eight conference games. Go ahead, Lucas.
Yeah, Coach, I'm just really trying to figure out the biggest reason for that shift that you're talking about. And the only one that I've been able to see that has been tangibly reported on is the idea of potentially trying to get more out of that 10-year deal with ESPN that's coming up for the SEC. Greg Sankey was with reporters yesterday saying that money isn't going to lead decisions. The money doesn't lead, the money follows, right, is what he said. So I'm just scratching my head, Coach, trying to figure out how there could be that big of a shift and what the reason for that would be if it's not money related or trying to get more money out of it.
I really, Lucas, don't think it's money related right now. I think that what has happened is, and this is, I think, pretty, if you just sit back and think about it, you know, right now in this 14-team league, all right, there's only six teams that have ever won the conference championship, all right, only six. So the majority, eight of the six, have never won a conference championship. And they're trying to figure out, if you go to three games, who are the three teams? So let's just take Tennessee, for example. Tennessee, you know, Vanderbilt would be one. The Alabama rivalry is such a great rivalry, you would think would be one. And then would it be Georgia or Florida? And then you go down to Alabama. Well, they're going to play Auburn. They probably would play Tennessee. Who would that other one be? But I think the biggest sticking point is for the great majority of the – or not the great majority, but the majority of the teams in this league, and Vanderbilt, probably a few others, everybody can kind of know who they are, they rely on those four non-conference games to get bowl eligible. The other part of it is Kentucky, they have to play Louisville every year. South Carolina has to play Clemson every year. So now, if you go to the nine-game schedule, they're actually got 10 Power 5 conference schools in there. That is the holdup right now. And I can see both sides of it. You know, if you're a traditionalist, I think the older you are, the traditional people would think that Tennessee, you know, that the Alabama game is such a big game. If you're Georgia or Auburn, that's the longest-running rivalry in the Southeastern Conference for, you know, going back into the 1800s. But How do you keep it kind of equal on who's playing the good teams every year, and you know, how do you even that out? And it's very difficult to. It's much simpler to do the one game because there's four teams, there's eight teams that'd be involved. Texas A&M obviously would play each other. Alabama, Auburn would play each other. Tennessee, Vanderbilt would play each other. Mississippi State would. So it's just a little bit easier now. One thing too, I throw in there that the new television contract is not starting until 2025, for the Southeastern Conference with ESPN. This is something they could do maybe for a year or two and switch it. They don't want to do that. But I think they're going to have a hard time getting eight teams to vote in all in one way. I don't know that they'll be able to get that done. Now, having said that, the most powerful man right now in college athletics and in college football for sure is Greg Sankey. And if Greg Sankey really starts twisting arms, I think he can get it to go either way he wants to. Remember this, too. Athletic directors can say whatever they want to. Head football coaches can say everything they want to. The last day of the meetings down here, it's all presidents. Everybody else has gone home. The presidents, they're the only vote that counts, the only vote that each school has. So it might get down to that president's vote right at the end, the very end. And I would bet on Commissioner Sankey getting whatever he feels best. Now, he's kind of kept his cards close to his chest on that. He hasn't said exactly where he is. So it's going to be interesting. But it gives us something to talk about. There's really nothing else to talk about down here right now.
No, I think it's fascinating to see how all these things are, the politics of it at this point. Speaking of politics, they're looking at congressional oversight for name, image, and likeness. It sounds like Congress is getting ready to propose a bill in the coming weeks that will likely introduce the bill on regulating name, image, and likeness for college student athletes. Coach Matthews, I wonder your perspective on this as somebody who has been around these programs, who has worked as a part of these programs, who's been a player as a part of your career. I wonder how all of this, I guess the wild, wild west elements of NIL versus federal oversight, how somebody like you in your position kind of views something like this.
Well, Buck, that's the conundrum, as they say.
Yeah.
There's no question that there needs to be some type. Right now, name, image, likeness, every state can do whatever they want to do. And some of them don't want to do anything, so they don't have any rules. There are a few, Tennessee being one of them, who put some rules in place. But you know, it's so difficult in the NCAA and college. We're talking college football on this show primarily. It's so difficult to have any type of regulations if you don't have more. You know, you can't go state by state on it, and that's where we are right now. Now, the other problem is, though, this, if you read this thing real closely, and I've followed up on the law that they're trying to get in place is in a subcommittee. I was a political science and government minor. Getting a subcommittee is about as basic as you get. It'd be like the three of us, me, you, and Lucas, you know, getting together and then going to the zone and trying to get going to Cumulus and trying to get something done. We're still a long way out from that. I don't know if you could ever get enough legislators to really be on one side or the other on this. I think right now they're just kind of whistling Dixie. But I think we're a long, long, long way from that. And that means we're going to be having unregulated name, image, likeness, I think, around for certainly the foreseeable future.
Which is crazy. I wish we had more time to talk about this. We're running out here with Coach Doug Matthews. Again, CoachDougMatthews.com is where you can go. Football Saturday and Big Orange Sunday. I know Lucas filled in for him this week as Coach Matthews is on vacation, but still kind enough to lend us his insight on the show. Coach, we'll have to have you back. This was a lot of fun for us.
We'll do it, and there should be a little clarity on the scheduling certainly coming out after this week. I'll be talking about it this weekend on the Saturday and the Sunday show. And again, next week, anytime you need anything like that, please let me know.
I absolutely will do that. That's Coach Doug Matthews there with us on 104.5 The Zone. The best. Your face when he said that they were trending towards the 8-game conference schedule.
It's the reasons behind it. I just cannot get behind.
Well, and why don't we talk about this coming up next? Because what he said there about the money and its impact or lack thereof, I found curious. We'll talk about that. We'll take your phone calls in reaction if you want to. 615-737-1045. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone.
Let's see. Something different for dinner. Searching restaurants near me.
Right here, ma'am. How can we help?
Gee, same old, same old.
Wait, we're right here, ma'am. Our restaurant's just a few blocks from you. Why is she not seeing us?
Back to the usual, I guess.
Ma'am, can you not see us?
Nope, they can't see you. Because you're buried deep in the list of local restaurants. You are invisible online. Introducing Cumulus Boost. Get a boost, get found, get on the map. Learn more at cumulusboost.com.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.
Lucas is disgusted. It's not usually something that happens after a Coach Doug Matthews visit. But the idea that the preference, it would seem, these things can shift, but that the preference of the voting members of the SEC is towards an 8-game conference schedule with one recurring annual opponent, which means that every year on the year, it would not be Tennessee, Alabama. It would not be Tennessee, Florida. It would not be, I don't know. What else? Tennessee, LSU, something spicier. It would be Tennessee and Vanderbilt.
Wouldn't be Kentucky. Wouldn't be Georgia.
Blech.
That would be, Coach Matthews is right. That would be the one permanent opponent between Tennessee and Vanderbilt. They would be each other.
It would have to be. It would have to be. I mean, and I understand why it would have to be, but God, that sucks.
Yeah, there's no juice to that rivalry.
Not at all. Yeah. And to remove,
relatively speaking.
So to remove, you're talking about removing a degree of pageantry from what it is that the SEC season is, and specifically to Tennessee. Right now we're running this through selfish prisms because Vanderbilt doesn't have these allegiances beyond or rivalries beyond the University of Tennessee, truly. And Tennessee has a great many that are also of great consequence at a time when Tennessee projects to be the best that it's been in quite some time. So not only do you have these great rivalries against Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, but you're doing it at a time where you could be the most competitive that I think you could be in any of those series. I mean, Kentucky notwithstanding, you kind of own Kentucky no matter how bad you've been. I would think that would hurt particularly badly for Vols fans because they're like, I just want to crack at Alabama every year now. Now is the chance that I get to take a shot at Alabama. I get to, you know, take them out at the knees. I've already gotten my first taste of blood. Now you're going to take it away from me? In 2025, theoretically, is what, because it sounds like 2024, they're going to do this eight conference game placeholder season was going to exist anyway. Like, it sounded like, based on what I was reading from Ross Dellinger at Sports Illustrated and from Dennis Dodd at CBS.
They could do that.
It sounds like if this is something that they put into place, that the eight conference game schedule is something that we were going to see in 2024. And then at that point, they could choose to either adopt it permanently or then adapt it into the nine game conference schedule.
I think Sankey would prefer to just have this resolved this week.
He doesn't want to have to go through all this again.
I think his quote was, you know, I'd rather land the plane than just continue circling the airport, because we had the same discussion a year ago today and they didn't have a vote on it. And Texas and Oklahoma will be there for what it's worth. They will have a voice. They just don't have a vote. But I'm upset at the idea of any progress being held back by schools that just want a better shot at bowl eligibility. I am upset at the idea that we are willing to have eight conference games versus nine, and we would have a Georgia Ball State game instead of a Georgia, you know, whoever, Mississippi State. What it would do for TV ratings, what it would do for ticket sales, for the fans. I'm upset that schools wanting to make a bowl game could hold us back from seeing Auburn and Georgia play each other every year, the oldest rivalry in the SEC.
So wait, let's take a beat. All of those things are correct. Nobody's going to dispute that. What are we missing here? Who's making this decision really? Who does this decision benefit the most, really? Because the hold up, and a question that, as far as I can tell, we still don't have an answer to, is the ESPN angle of this. The extra money from ESPN that the conference would, in theory, get by playing an extra conference game schedule, where is that as a factor in all of this?
So Greg Sankey talked about this yesterday. I'm reading the Dennis Dodd report from CBS Sports, where he says the biggest issue at the moment is that ninth game many in the SEC hope would reportedly, or that ninth game that many in the SEC hope to add would reportedly not earn the league additional money.
Right.
He says it's not expected that ESPN, that holds the entirety of the media rights deal for the SEC starting in 2024, it's a 10-year deal, it's not expected that they would commit to paying additional money if the SEC added a ninth contest. So that's the thought process here. It's like, well, if we dangle that carrot, maybe we can get more out of this. But if they're not willing to give us more for the ninth game, then no, we're gonna stick with eight. Now, Greg Commissioner Sankey said yesterday, I'm very upset, said yesterday.
Quote, now, wait. Just calm down. It's going to be okay. I haven't seen you like this since you found out that the SEC on CBS Music was going to go to the Big Ten.
Oh, don't even get me started on that. He said, money follows, it doesn't lead. He called it the principle of his existence. Mm. When all you do is chase money, you make really bad decisions.
No.
That's my feeling. I'm watching that happen in college sports right now. So
I think that's the only time that I've outright disagreed with Greg Sankey. In what world does money follow? I mean, I understand what he's trying to say from an infrastructure standpoint. He's trying to build a model that's sustainable, right? And then what he's saying, if I'm interpreting this correctly, he's saying that our task is to build the most sustainable model, and the money, there will be money that comes as a result of that, not to chase the model that has the most money initially attached.
Yeah, and he's also saying there is money in stadium revenue. There is money in what we can give these fans with that extra conference game.
Yeah.
And he added, because he talked about the pros and cons of both, but he also said conference metrics have shown that there is little impact in bowl eligibility between playing 8 or 9 conference games. So Coach Matthews is right. All the context clues show that Greg Sankey wants 9 conference games. And that makes sense because it's a no-brainer. More is better than less. And the haves are not totally innocent of all this. You know, there is a narrative that the have-nots are going to want to drag this down, give them a better shot for bowl eligibility. But Nick Saban was out there complaining about the projected 3 rivalry, you know, fixed permanent opponent games that Alabama would get from Ross Dellinger, where he says, well, they gave us Tennessee, Auburn, and LSU. I don't know how they came up with that. So now the reports are that Alabama is also more on the 8 side than they are the 9 game side.
Why wouldn't they be? I understand it if you're a coach, but the coaches don't matter in this.
But it is frustrating when Nick Saban, who has been banging on the table for more conference games for over a decade, yeah, saying it's better for the fans, it's better for the conference for us to have an extra conference game as opposed to a game against Georgia Southern. Now, because Tennessee is good again and LSU is obviously rising with Brian Kelly again and the Iron Bowl is always a marquee game and a competitive game, now suddenly he's saying, oh, well, no, well, if they're going to give us that, then no, I don't want that extra conference game that I've been begging for the last 10 years anymore.
It can be frustrating and also make so much more sense for Nick Saban.
And I get why, from Vanderbilt's perspective, of course I understand why Vanderbilt would rather have 8 conference games.
No, what you're annoyed by is the idea that Vanderbilt has as much voting weight as any of these other programs in the middle of all this.
Sure, and so I'm frustrated by the situation while understanding that if I was in Vanderbilt's position, I obviously would be angling for the same thing.
People are making fun of you because you're waving your pen around.
It's a Sharpie, and I'll wave it into oblivion until the SEC plays 9 conference games and does what's right.
You better hope that's a magic wand that you've got back there, bud, because it sounds like you're getting 8 and you're going to like it. 615-737-1045. Let's talk about, speaking of sales pitches, let's talk about the Titans' best sales pitch for DeAndre Hopkins. What could they possibly say to make a place like this interesting for one of the league's best wide receivers? We'll talk about that. Mike Giardi, all in the final hour, coming up next.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers' world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next question, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.